Two men were arguing about a flag flapping in the wind. "It is the wind that is really moving," stated the first one. "No, it is the flag that is moving," contended the second. A Zen master, who happened to be walking by, overheard the debate and interrupted them. "Neither the flag nor the wind is moving," he said. "It is mind that moves." Welcome to the Alchemical Mind. The topic for today's episode is free will. And if you've listened to the podcast for a while, you know that the one thing that I enjoy doing on the show is not leave you hanging till the end to give you a conclusion. So I'll give you the conclusion right at the beginning. And the conclusion is this: free will is not free, nor is it willing. So let's talk about what that means. In Western society, we have come to this conclusion that we're individuals. We value the individual, we value the person, the self, above other things. And what this has led is to this idea that has been present for many thousands of years. One interpretation of the Genesis passage of the Bible is that God kind of created the universe, created the plants and the trees and the flowers and the insects and the animals and all things on this planet to be kind of guided along by mankind, where mankind would be shepherds of this new piece of creation. And as a result, over time, we have kind of taken this idea of controlling and ruling over the planet as kind of our central ethos, particularly within Western society. That's why many times Western cultures have invaded other places, other cultures, other tribes, other countries around the world, and tried to instill their own will, if you will, on those people, on those cultures. Now, this is, of course, not going to be a social-political discussion, so we're going to leave that there. But that's one of the repercussions to think about when we have this worldview that we are in charge of anything. And the truth is, we're not really in charge of anything at all. We're simply pawns, simply pieces of a larger puzzle trying to resolve itself. One of the key takeaways that I've had over these past 6 months, and something that's been floating around in the ether of my mind over the past year, maybe two, is the idea of how to live my life according to rules that, I guess aren't really rules. How to determine how I can live my life according to outcomes instead of reactions. Because see, when you think you have free will of thought, where you have the ability to choose, you end up losing the ability to control anything. Because, of course, there's nothing to control. One of my favorite metaphors on this podcast is the idea of laying down and floating downstream. And for some, that's a little crazy that you would allow chance to take a hold of what you are. You want to be in control. You want to be in control of your job and your personal financial situation, your personal familiar situation, right? You want to control who you are friends with, who you associate with. And you feel like because you have the ability to say, well, tonight I want to eat pizza instead of spaghetti, that somehow that gives you the ability to have some sort of free will, free thought, this freedom of choice. And that is not what's happening at all. That's a fallacy. It is purely imagination. And those of you that have listened to the podcast for a while may have come to the very astute observation that no episode that I do for this podcast is an island unto itself, to use an old paradigm. All the episodes are interconnected, just like the choices that we feel we make are interconnected. And so oftentimes you'll see some kind of overlap in the discussions and the examples. You'll hear me reference previous episodes. If you're astute enough, you'll kind of get a glimpse of what the next 3 or 4 or 5 episodes may be discussing, because those things come up in any particular episode. And just in that way, we are led to believe, with our astute observations, with our clever minds, that somehow by making these decisions, we can influence the outcome of things. You guys know I love talking about The Secret, not because The Secret isn't true, the idea behind The Secret isn't true, but because The Secret itself, the interpretation of what The Secret is in essence complete and utter bullshit. To feel like you can influence the direct outcome of something based on willpower, sheer willpower, is nonsense. Now, I don't want to pick on those of you that believe in free will, that you are free acting agents in this ever-evolving universe. I don't want to feel like I'm picking on you. And some of you will hate when I talk about these kind of things because you feel like you're somehow giving up your own authority in order to understand what it is that I'm trying to say on the podcast. And that's not my intention at all. My intention is for you to realize there's no choice to be made in the first place. And when you truly realize there is no choice to be made, that is when you really become free. That is the true meaning of free will, if you will. To have no choice to make at all. That is true freedom. Now, some of you, of course, are very into some conspiracy theories, and you feel, you know, these cabals taking over the world, and rich people controlling things in 1%, and the reptilians and whatever. And that's a nice story to tell. But see, immediately by believing in these things, you're automatically removing your own authority. You're removing your own power to be free, because if something goes awry, something goes in a way that you did not want it to go, you automatically blame whoever you feel is in control for your own downfall. And see, if you're doing that, you should be very cleverly devising that you are not free. If somebody else is controlling you, you have no freedom. So what will is there for you to free if you're automatically giving that power away? See, the problem is you're still believing that you're some kind of meat sack roaming around this planet, this giant rock, making decisions and moving things around to benefit yourself or to benefit those that you love, those around you. Definitely your family, hopefully. Maybe your friends, hopefully. Maybe your town or your city or your country, hopefully. But that's not the case at all. Have you ever wondered what a truly free-willed individual would be like? And you can immediately come up with many examples of how you feel like you have free will, the ability to make a choice and impact the things around you. So you can wake up in the morning and choose to go to work and make money so you can pay your bills and feed your family. Or you can choose to stay home and fall behind your bills, lose your house, lose your family, whatever. You can make that decision yourself. You get hungry, you feel like, I'm going to go in the refrigerator, see what I have there. Then I can choose what I'm going to feed myself. I can choose the pizza, the spaghetti, or the broccoli, or whatever. Whatever you're into. Maybe you just want ice cream. You want to go grocery shopping. You want to go, let's say you want to go shoe shopping. You can decide to go to, you can go to the mall. Or you say, I don't really want to go to the mall. I'm going to go to the shoe store, Rack Room Shoes. Not a sponsor. I don't care about sponsors. You can make that decision. And so you feel like because you can make those decisions, you're free to impart your will on things. But again, that's not freedom, nor is it will. There's nothing willing there. Every decision that you're making at any point in time is not a free, conscious decision that you're making to impart that choice on your life. Think about that for a second. Anytime you make a decision, the decision is already made for you. There have been experiments going back decades, in particular over the last 10 or so years, in which you can scientifically prove that there's no decision to be made. And these things are getting more and more sophisticated now. You have things like Elon Musk's Neuralink and things like that There's a really interesting project called Kernel that kind of dives a little bit into this, in which you can get instantaneous feedback from your brain to determine, once you learn how to read these signals properly, to determine what it is that your brain's going to do before your brain actually does it. Now, how can this be possible? If you are a free conscious agent making decisions on a day-to-day basis, a minute-by-minute basis, how could it be possible that if you attach a machine and read out the output from that machine, that the machine can tell you exactly what you're going to do before you do it? Aren't you in control of your mind? Aren't you a free agent? Don't you have a choice to make a choice? And the answer quite simply is no. You don't have that. You don't have that. Every choice that you make isn't a choice that you make consciously. The choice is made for you before you realize it yourself. We're not going to go into the intricacies of my idea of mind and brain. I've mentioned them in previous episodes, how there are no brains. Brains are illusions. How the thoughts that arise in and out of your mind aren't your own thoughts. They're simply floating in the ether, floating in the universe. They're just simply other aspects of the bethos coming in and out of the antenna that you call your brain, okay? We'll just do that simply. That'll be the simple philosophical idea behind this. If you really want to be free, you have to learn to be willing. And by willing, I don't mean to impart your own will on others, but to learn to become the willingness itself. This is where we get kind of really deep into the philosophical aspects, and some of you hate that stuff because maybe you're not at the level to be able to understand concepts like isness and what that truly entails. How you can change the way you look at objects from being objects, physical manifestations of some other, into simply spontaneous manifestations of nothingness, of isness. Because one thing that I've really tried to do and worked very hard with myself on doing to try to get a better understanding of some of these deeper philosophical concepts is to recreate the framework that I use to float around in this physical manifestation that we live in. One thing that I've done is, instead of working my way outside in, I work from the inside out. So instead of creating a set of rules which guide my life and my decision-making process, and of course I'm putting that in quotes because, again, there's not really much decision to be made, is I've started creating my worldview from the kernel and working my way out. If you are familiar with things like BASIC, I used to do this quite a bit. Back in high school, we used these, what were they called? TI-80s, TI-85s, TI-80-something. The TI calculators, Texas Instrument calculators, graphing calculators. Very advanced scientific calculators we used in high school for math, which, you know, you can graph immediately right on the screen. Obviously, you don't really need these anymore. You can do this all on computers. But back then, you know, computers weren't as good. And it was much simpler to have this graphing calculator in math class. And one really cool thing about these graphing calculators was the ability to write your own programs in a programming language called BASIC. And it's called BASIC because it's very simple. It's very basic. And so, you know, you would have these commands and you can reference the commands to each other. So, for example, you would have your first line, line 10. You would, you know, ask for input from the user. When the user enters the input, you go to line 20. It analyzes the input that the user was given. And you can say, well, if the, you know, let's ask a question, right? You can say, are you having a good day today? Go to line 20. Line 20, user enters input. And then you say, if user said yes, go to line 30. If user says no, go to line 10. Okay, so you're creating a loop here. So if the program asks me, are you having a good day? I say, yes. I go to line 30. Line 30 says, great. I'm happy you're having a great day. If the user says no, you go back to line 10. And what does it do? It asks you again, are you having a good day? And you can do this an infinitum. And obviously, this is a very simple example of a basic program, and I'm only using it because of its simplicity. Because this is the way that I've begun to analyze and recreate my worldview. One of the most common questions that I've received this year, since the episode that I put out in February to Helen Beck, and even now, after my 100 Days of Silence, one thing that I've been receiving a lot is, can you talk about how the experiences that you've received this year have changed your point of view on some of the topics that you've discussed over the previous, I don't even know what episode we're on, we'll say 70 episodes. Do you still believe in the same things? And the answer to that question in the large part is yes, but the way that I see them in many regards has changed a bit. Because what I do is I begin with a central concept of whether a higher entity exists. Okay? That has been my central concept in order to base other things around. And so my answer to that, obviously, for those of you that listen regularly will know, is yes. To me, the experiences that I've had is definitive proof of a yes. So then I can go from there. Is this higher entity enacting its will on me or on the things around me or not? And from there, I can move on to the next thing and see the answer to that question for me for a while has been no. That thing is not enacting its will on me. And so then you need to decide, well, if that thing doesn't enact its will on you, what are the repercussions of that particular statement on the next statement that you want to base your worldview on? Okay? And it's not a matter of choosing that worldview. It's about going through this thing programmatically, logically, and trying to understand the implications of it without imparting your own bullshit, without imparting your own ideas, your own imagination onto what that thing means. You just simply make that choice. You make that answer to the question. Make as much sense as you can out of your limited personal capabilities to understand. Because again, remember, you're just a finite piece of an infinite whole. And so you can never understand the entire whole in itself. So the best you can do in order to understand infinity is to begin applying your own perspectives on what that would entail. Now, this is obviously how philosophy works, how a lot of science used to work. There are still scientists that work this way. But of course, science has become very dogmatic, in essence has become, in a way, a sort of religion, and you all know how I feel about religion. Now, religion and science can give you this freedom of choice, this free will, if you don't allow it to overtake your own personal experience, okay? Not to overwrite your will, your choice to choose, your ability to choose, but where you can use it as a framework to make informed decisions. Okay, there's nothing inherently wrong or bad in the thing itself. It is in how you choose to interpret that thing. Now, if the thing removes your authority from yourself, because of course, you are still in charge of your limited self, but those things are bound by rules that already pre-existing. Of course, the number one rule pre-existing is the thing that generally guides most of the other decisions that you make on a day-to-day basis. And that rule is very simple. The rule is, I will not harm myself. Now, there are people that go through depressive moments who may try to cut themselves. Maybe there's people that undergo suicide attempts. I've talked about my own personal battle with a similar experience, in which you get to a point that you can, in essence, choose. My whole worldview has crumbled. How do I move forward? And this is the type of the resurrection, the enlightenment Buddhahood experience that many of the mystical prophets talk about throughout human history. Now, it is how you handle this moment in time that determines the next piece of the puzzle. Now, unfortunately for you, many times, this choice is already made for you. And for many, this might seem insensitive or emotionless or unempathetic to say, well, how can you say that if somebody successfully commits suicide, that's what was meant to happen? Aren't you then going into determinism, right? The opposite side of free will. And the answer to that, again, is no. And that's why I began this episode with the Buddhist cone that I mentioned. There's many of these. They're fantastic. If you ever get a time, go on Amazon, go to your local bookstore, and purchase a collection of Zen cones. Now, chances are, many of them will probably fly over your head. You'll have no idea what any of it means. But eventually, in time, if you continue your pursuits of knowledge and understanding in how to become your true self, and here we go using these crazy phrases that I hate using because they're so overused, they mean nothing anymore, but defining your true self, defining what it actually means to be a human being, then you'll begin to put those pieces of the puzzle together. Because see, that is the purpose of resurrection. It is not that one day your body will come back, you'll have a physical body again, you'll look exactly the same, you live in your magical mansion up in heaven for eternity, or live as some kind of spirit roaming the universe, observing things. All of this is simply imagination. Remember that. It's simply imagination. Nobody has attained these states in the way that the meaning is implied upon has ever come back and said this is exactly how it is. Now, I can tell you anything. I can say when you die, you're going to be a giant grasshopper hopping around from planet to planet. And eventually, if some cult arises out of this thing, and this is one thing that I said, then the people following this cult will say, oh, well, Martin said that when we die, we'll be giant grasshoppers flying from planet to planet. How wonderful. You can go anywhere you want in the universe. We'll live forever. We'll be eternal grasshoppers, chomping on the grasses of the ethereal, free to do as we please anywhere in the universe. Now, does that make it true? Because I said such a thing is true? Because some person that believes my ideas are great in 2,000 years, because they're saying it, does that make it true? Of course not. Did I die and become a giant grasshopper and said, this is great, let me go back and tell everybody about it, and return as a grasshopper or as a human being? No. And if I did come back and I told everybody, well, I died, I came back, and when I died, let me tell you, you don't become a grasshopper, you are a giant earthworm. And when I come back, people will be like, well, that's BS. You said you're going to be a grasshopper. What do you mean you changed your mind? You must be some fake. You're not really Martin. Come back and tell us the truth. There's a thing that I think about sometimes, right? If Jesus were to return, as is prophesized in the Bible, again, he didn't really say anything about returning. The people behind him did. If he were to return and do that and say to people, well, you kind of got the meaning wrong, will people believe it, right? That's something that I do think about, I have thought about. But what does that have to do with free will? If you go back to the Zen koan, all these two people are doing is arguing about semantics. All they're doing is imparting their own conceptual idea of what they feel should be true based on the viewpoint that they have on the world around them. And they're arguing about it like it makes any difference. But see, the Zen master knows better, because the Zen master understands the truth. And the truth is that both of the arguments are fallacies. They're pure imagination created by the idea to feel like these things, these humans, are correct in what they feel about the way the universe works. And the Zen master doesn't say, that's not how it works, you idiot, it's this way. because then he wouldn't be a master. Then he'd simply be a third person butting into the argument with their own conceptual ideas. And so all he says is, it is the mind that moves. See, this is the difference in how you learn to actually determine the truthiness of something or not. It doesn't matter if you have the conscious ability to make a choice, if you have free will. And it doesn't matter if you feel like you're just a pawn in a giant chess game. Because the real answer is that neither of these things are true, and both are true at the same time. And so in order for you to understand the truthiness of things, and I like all these words that end in N-E-S, because it's just like having the quality of something, not necessarily implying that thing to be true. Why use the term isness so much? Because these are kind of more non-dual terms. Isness doesn't imply that something is or isn't. It just has the quality of existence. And physical manifestation, or ethereal manifestation, spiritual manifestation, these are just two aspects of isness. Just like free will and determinism are two aspects of isness. The choices that you make are very limited. Sure, you can choose between the spaghetti and pizza when you're hungry, but what is the actual choice? The choice isn't what you chose to eat. The choice is whether you choose to eat or not. And your programming says that you will eat, because if you don't eat, you will die. And so at the core is, will you die? Now, when you understand that this is the actual argument between free will and determinism, you realize there is, in an essence, some choice that can be made, but those choices that are made live within a set of guidelines that are determined by your pre-existing condition. And your pre-existing condition is for you being a human being. If a rock were to listen to this podcast, the pre-existing condition would be to be a rock. Now, the choices that the rock has to make are much simpler than the choices that you and human beings have to make. And we confuse the complexity of choice with the existence of choosing. Because the only choice that a rock has to make is sit. That is a choice. Sit. Does a rock have any other choice outside from sitting? Can the rock say, well, I don't want to sit here anymore, let me go sit over there? The answer is no. But see, in a way, the rock can impart its own will on the world around it, where things may happen in which the rock is moved from one spot to the next. Now, for some of you, you think I've gone off the deep end. For one, for implying that the rock has the ability to choose anything, that the rock has some kind of conscious thought within it that allows it to decide whether it sits in one place or go to the next. And then beyond that, how could the rock possibly have the ability to influence the world around it in order for the world to find a way to move the rock to a different place? Martin's gone off the deep end. Martin's saying that rocks are conscious, free-willing agents. And see, if this is your thought, then you're not understanding the implication of the idea. You're muddling it with your imagination because you feel like somehow you're better than the rock. You're no better than the rock. You're no different than the rock. You have no more ability to impart your own will on the world than the rock does. You guys know I love Alan Watts. One thing that Alan Watts always talks about is this idea of do happening. And this is an idea that I've loved very much for a long time. And an idea that has slowly crept into my own life, my own recreation of the universe, as I have traveled from a very dualistic point of view to a very non-dual point of view. And what this do happening idea basically implies is that there are no things imparting will upon other things. There's just simply action. And it's not conscious action. These things are simply evolving out of a basic rule set. And those basic rule sets give the illusion of the ability to choose. But all that does is impart that will onto other things for them to have an illusion of choice. But see, there's no things, there's no choices. It's all one giant whirlpool, whirlpooling, okay? That's why I like this idea of do happening. This idea of there is no whirlpool in a river. The river is whirlpooling. Sure, it's only at this one particular spot, but the river is whirlpooling. It's not an object creating another object. It's an action imparting itself onto another action. It's an ever complex set of actions enacting upon each other. And so, yes, there are some basic rules, and yes, there are some basic choices. But these two things are not separate from each other. They're one thing interacting with itself. The Bethos. God, if you want to call it that. That's all it is. That's all that exists, is the one infinite circumference, with each of us being manifestations of that one thing, that isness. That is the choice that is being made. The Bethos doesn't choose, hey, today on the sixth day, we're going to create humans. It's not a choice that's made. It's all these other choices that were made beforehand interacting with each other. And again, these are not conscious choices. These are choices that arise out of rule sets. And eventually, the rule set creates a choice of creating a human being. That is the choice that was made. Because there was no other choice to be made. You see? You're making a choice, but there is no choice to be made. Because the choice, the outcome is already decided. The outcome is already decided for you. At any given point of space, in any given point of time. That outcome is already decided. People talk a lot about things like the many worlds theory, right? In which there's an infinite number of universes available to us. In which case, I'm surprised that scientists could not quit being scientists if this is what they actually believe in. Because if that were the case, then there is the inherent deduction that if any particular choice branches off and creates its own separate universe, if this were to be true, then that means that you could never possibly find the answer to any problem. And as a scientist, you want to find answers to problems. So how does it work for you that you're okay with there being no answer to anything? Because the answer to anything is anything you could possibly imagine, and those things that you yourself cannot imagine, right? It would be every possibility that lives within the Bethos. That is the answer to any particular answer or any particular question. And this kind of lies at the heart of the deep etymological questions of what it is to know anything. When you start to realize you could never know anything to be 100% certain and true, then you quit worrying about those things. Because in essence, they don't matter. They make no difference to your own personal state and condition in the manifestation that you're in right now as a human being. It makes no difference whatsoever. So if every choice that is made splits off the universe into two separate universes, which of course means that at any point in time, an infinite number of universes is sparked as any given choice is made, right? Whether an asteroid hits a planet or not, whether the sun comes out or not, whether the wind blows left or right, whether you choose to eat spaghetti or pizza, at any point in time, you're splitting off an infinite number of times. And so if this is the case, what choice is there to be made? Because regardless of what choice you made, the only outcome that will arise out of it is the outcome that was already predetermined. Predetermined by these simple set of rules. If this, then that. Now again, it doesn't mean you're not making a choice. You are making a choice, but that choice is not free, nor is it willing. Because you can only live with the outcome of that one choice. And so you feel like at the end of the day, you say, okay, today I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to go find a new job. And maybe that doesn't go as you planned. Maybe the new job that you get is worse. And then what do you say to yourself? Well, I made a terrible choice. I wish I could have made this choice better. I wish I would have stayed at my previous job. Or you go and you get married to someone and you feel like they're wonderful. And then within a year, you're constantly fighting with each other. And then you say to yourself, well, God, if only I had made a better choice, if I had made a better choice for a partner, then I wouldn't be living in this state of suffering that I'm in right now, arguing with this person constantly. But see, that's not freedom of choice. That's freedom of remembrance. But see, even then, you have some fallacies that you have to deal with. Because if I say to you, I want you to recall your most favorite moment in your life, chances are the moment that you will remember instantly is not your favorite moment ever. You're not actively choosing to go back and recall a specific memory. Chances are a memory spontaneously popped up into your mind. How that memory was chosen, I have no idea. I'm not you. But a memory popped out into your mind. And then you say to yourself, oh, wait, no, that's not my favorite one. Let me go back and think about this and figure out which one my favorite one was. It's my grandma. When grandma made me those chocolate chip cookies, I love chocolate chip cookies. I love my grandma. They smell great. That's my favorite moment. What makes that moment better for you? Your favorite moment over whatever moment picked out of the ether, out of nowhere, and popped into your mind. You should think about these things. Before you assume something to be true, you should determine its truthiness. Because I guarantee you, there's things like, for example, the sun coming out in the morning. Every day you wake up and you assume when you open your eyes, unless, you close your windows or your blinds or your curtains or whatever, chances are you wake up. And maybe the sun hits you in the eyes, and you say, "Ah, oh, God, it's so bright in here. Wish it wasn't so bright." And you get up and you go about your business. And so, because you know this is the case, you get curtains. We have blackout curtains in our bedrooms because we love the darkness. Chances are you make these kind of choices to stop direct sunlight from hitting you in the eye because you don't want that experience, right? You don't like that experience, so you're trying to make yourself more comfortable. You find some choice to make to do that. But see, number one, that's not a choice that you're making. Number two, you're automatically assuming the sun's going to come up. That's why you're getting these blackout curtains. You assume because the sun has always come up in your entire life and it has come up for generations, centuries, millennia, millions, billions of years. You assume that tomorrow when you wake up, the sun's going to hit you in the eyes. And so you want these blackout curtains. But there's nothing inherently true about the sun coming out tomorrow. Anything can happen between right now when you're listening to this and tomorrow morning, in which the sun gets knocked out of orbit, the planet gets knocked out of orbit, maybe the sun just goes out completely, something happens, and tomorrow the sun doesn't come out. Now, of course, if that were the case, chances are you don't really need to worry about the sun coming out because you'll freeze to death between now and then. Science aside, this is something that you always assume to be true. And so you make choices around it based on the assumed truthiness of that thing. But again, there's nothing stopping the sun from not coming out tomorrow. Just like you don't walk out on the street and choose to be hit by a car and die. That's not something people choose generally. I mean, sure, maybe there are people that want to commit suicide and they feel like that might be one way to do it. But on a day-to-day basis, that's not true. There's many choices that you make throughout the day that you feel this is the way that I have to do them. Sometimes maybe you feel like you have no choice. And that gives you some kind of existential crisis. That's when you get depressed. That's when you get anxiety. Because then you say, oh my God, what am I going to do? I have no choice. I have to go and rob this bank. Whatever the circumstances are behind you having to go rob a bank are irrelevant to me. Let's just say you have to go rob a bank. Okay, you're presented with this choice, and the only logical choice is for you to rob this bank. Any other choice makes no sense. You get anxious. Now, of course, there's always the other choice of not going to rob a bank. But see, this culture of instant gratification that we're building around ourselves prevents even that from making sense. This culture of instant gratification is robbing us further of the ability to use our giant brain antennas to make better choices, more informed choices. You'll never make the right choice. Every choice that you make will be wrong because every choice that you make will have consequences. The consequences of the choice that you make may end up being not as serious for some choices over others. But every choice that you make has an impact. Now, the impact to you might be small, but the impact to somebody else might be large. And, you know, overall, the impact won't really make much difference in terms of the universe. Because these are just do happenings impacting other do happenings. It's like when you play billiards. You play pool. I love billiards. It's one of my favorite things. I haven't played in many, many years. But it was always very relaxing for me. And that's basically what you're doing. You're hitting a ball, and that ball's hitting another ball, and the ball might hit another ball. Maybe it goes into the hole. Maybe it hits another ball. Doesn't matter. But this is the way that the universe evolves. And it's guided by a basic rule of equilibrium. So if one thing becomes very erratic, chances are it's because another place is less erratic. And this entropy is flowing in and out. This set of randomness is going in and out between states and pieces of the whole. But you don't have the apparatus to understand how this thing works as a whole. All you know is how you work yourself, and maybe those around you if you're lucky. And so in order to make us feel better, as a survival mechanism, we devise this idea of free will or pure determinism in order to decide how things work for us. If things go well, we made a good choice. If things go badly, then it's somebody else's fault. Well, that's not free will, is it? If you decide that a bad outcome is somebody else's fault, then you don't have free will. How hard is it for you to say, I messed up, it's my fault. I'm in this situation because I made a bad decision. Well, for one, you maybe shouldn't feel bad. At least if you understand the mechanism of how this thing works. Now, in some sense, maybe you should feel bad. Because other people aren't in the state of understanding that you might be in. And so for them, they want to know, if you messed up, you need to own up to it. And so you do. I've done this many times. I've done it recently. This year, I've done it dozens of times. Because I realized that the choices that I was making weren't impacting just me, they were impacting those around me. And by impacting those around me, I'm removing their authority from make that decision and placing it upon myself. And see, that's part of the whole conundrum. Because no choice that you make impacts you directly. It impacts everything around you. You're living in a giant Venn diagram, and every choice that you make will affect the life of another person. I'm going to mention crypto again on this episode. I mentioned it last episode. And if you are simply here for the philosophical, spiritual aspects of the podcast, then maybe you're not quite there yet, because there's no difference between real life and spiritual life. But I want to mention it because you see this thing happen sometimes, if you pay attention to it. On Twitter, for example, where people, they pump some kind of coin that they want to make a bunch of money on. And they get a group of their friends to make the choices, and people are like, oh, I don't want to miss out on this thing. Let me go buy this coin. And so that way I can become a millionaire. And people that are paying attention are saying, hey, all these people are buying. The price is going up. Now we got to sell. And we own the most of it because we were pumping it. Now we're going to sell it and make a bunch of money. And what happens? Well, the people that were, you know, buying $50 here, $20 there, just because they didn't want to miss out, they become the losers. And see, so now you've made this conscious decision to hurt another do happening, to remove its ability to impart its own ability to dance in the universe for your own benefit. Now, yes, this appears to be a choice, but there's no choice to be made with, because this is the basic rule set of economics. There will be winners and there will be losers. Now, we do live in a world where any government can print out any number of money that they want, but then you deal with things like inflation and the impacts of that. But until this money is magically printed out of nowhere, out of the ether, there is an available supply, and when the supply goes down, the price goes up. And when you price goes up and you sell everything you have, that means the supply is much higher now, and so the price drops. That's an inherent rule. So you're seeing here the interaction between the ability of an agent to make some kind of choice and the impact that it has on the system as a whole because of a set of rules. And this is why this is the second time that I talked about crypto. I'd love to do a whole episode on crypto, but I guarantee most people won't listen to that. But there's some really interesting philosophical implications of cryptocurrencies and the like. So the question you need to ask is, I just realized this is an Allen quote too. Allen Watts said, "Do you do it or does it do you?" Think about that. Think about that. Think about how the choices that you make impact the system that you're embedded in. Because if you didn't live in this larger system comprised of an infinite number of do happenings, then maybe at that point, any choice that you made would be free and willing. But until something happens in which you become the only thing in existence, and again, separate this from what I normally say, I always end the podcast with "you are it." There's a difference between "you are it" and solipsism. You're not the only thing in the entire universe. Now, you might be it. You might be God. You might be the universe. But that's only within your own universe. And you live in a collection of intertwined, ever-evolving universes, enacting on themselves, pushing themselves around in order to achieve an outcome. What that outcome is? The outcome is to continue impacting other outcomes. The outcome is for do happenings to continue creating other do happenings that impact other do happenings, and where the ultimate do happening, the Godhead, the Bethos, continues to evolve itself in creating more and more complex systems to create more and more complex systems. That might not be the answer that you're looking for, but maybe it'll give you some things to think about. We're going to wrap this episode here. I want to thank you all for listening. It's always a treat to do this podcast. I know some of you are excited for the return of the podcast. I'm glad that's the case. This is actually the second episode that I'm recording back to back. I've recorded the next several weeks worth of episodes, so they will be out. Beginning with the next one, I'm going to start posting them a week early on Patreon. So if you're on the Patreon, you'll get those a week early. I'd love to do some additional Patreon content at the moment, maybe return back to the mindfulness meditation course that I had started. I'm still playing around with that a little bit. I'd like to do something a little more interesting for the Patreons than just having content that nobody else can listen to. I don't think that abides by the philosophy of what I want this podcast to be. That's why I don't take advertiser money. I've been approached by advertisers. I don't do advertisers. I never will. I will cross-promote. I'll be cross-promoting a couple podcasts. That's, of course, being free of charge. I just want people to check out other shows that are interesting, and maybe their audience will find this show interesting. Who knows? So we will do that. The Patreon will come up. I have changed several things on the Patreon. I removed a lot of the higher tiers for the exact reason that I just mentioned. So basically, what I want out of the Patreon is a value for value model. I think that abides a little better by the philosophy of the show. So if you want to contribute, you can go on there and start at $1 a month. I think there's a $3 tier and a $5 tier. Right now, they may have additional benefits. I'm still playing around with that again. But ultimately, my goal is for all the tiers to be equal. And whatever tier you choose to support the show at to be whatever tier you feel provides you the most value. And, you know, if somebody says, "Well, I wish there was a $100 tier," I mean, maybe I'll consider it. But I'm not doing this show to make money. I'm doing this show to share some of my thoughts, my thought process on my own life and my own universe that I've created, if you will. So that's all I want. The Patreon money it's going to upgrading my office. I haven't used any of it since I started the Patreon. I just bought a brand new laptop with some of the funds from the Patreon. I'm redoing my office. The next thing is going to be to get some new equipment. I'm going to get a new microphone and things like that. And I know there's people listening on YouTube that want video. I'm still deciding whether I want to do that, but I have been playing around with it a little bit. So that may be something that's coming in the near future. I just want to make sure I have the right equipment to do it. And I'm still undecided whether having a talking head on a screen for an hour is really that interesting, if it's any more interesting than just listening. So those are all things that I'm playing around with, but I want to thank you all for listening. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at Mind Alchemical. You can email Martin at The Alchemical Mind, and that's it. As always, remember that you are it. All of it.